Hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox Podcast. My name is Ian Esker. Joining me, as always, is James Fox. And tonight we have the pleasure of welcoming the play-by-play voice of the Winston-Salem Dash, Mr. Andrew Murphy. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you guys for having me on. This is always a treat.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. So this first opening weekend wasn't supposed to be your opening weekend. So do you want to recount the events of the Rome series that opened your season?
Yeah. So I overstated it on the broadcast because just in case somebody was tuning on, it was like, what's going on here? I thought the Dash were supposed to be away. They were supposed to be away. There were some facilities issues at the Rome Emperors Stadium down in Georgia that prevented them from hosting the opening weekend series. So it came down to the wire, and there was a chance that we would be good and everything would work out normally, and that's not what happened. So I think with less than 48 hours to go, we were made aware that the opening series would be played in Winston-Salem. So we said, okay, just three extra games to plan for, no big deal. Oh, except we do have two proms scheduled for the weekend, so we're going to have to make that work. We actually made history, by the way, as I believe the first prom ever to be held at a minor league baseball game. So go us. But there was a lot of good baseball played that weekend as well. And it gave kind of a glimpse into what this season could be at the high level for the Chicago White Sox. And despite an early record of 5-10, I think that there's plenty of excitement to come this year. That was one of the first points when I was kind of jogging my mind for talking points tonight, is to make it known that the record that's shown by the Winston-Salem Dash right now, is not at all a reflection of how this team competes and how they perform. So it ended up being a great weekend, and I got three extra games in, and we got some extra fans through the gates that we normally wouldn't. So it ended up working out, but the team looked really good to kick things off.
Yeah, I will say that they do play till the last pitch of the game. Yep. There's been some unfortunate moments here in the last, especially the last week.
They
had that tough series in Greenville. But we'll get to some of that stuff in a bit. So you have a new manager this year in Winston-Salem. Pat Leland's got kind of like a reputation as being like a bulldog players manager that kind of has no problem getting in the face of the umpires, always has his players back. What have you noticed having dealt with Pat so far this year?
Well, this will be my fifth season, and I've had the pleasure of working with some really, really good managers. I mean, Guillermo Quiroz the last 2 years was fantastic to work with. I loved working with Lorenzo Bundy and just kind of, mining the knowledge that he's obtained over such a long career in player development, even some stints at the big leagues. And then Ryan Newman, who in 2021 had already been working in the White Sox system for several years, had a lot of good insight and wisdom. And it was a tough year then too, because it was right out of COVID. So kudos to him for making that work. All the managers I've worked with have brought something special to the table. In Pat, I've noticed from the jump that he is an intense, no games, get to work, play to win minor league manager. And I think that's a really easy thing to buy into as a young player. And it's become pretty clear that he has his players bought in because of that intensity. But like you said, he also definitely has their back. He is not afraid to get in the face of an umpire. He always asks for an explanation on something that looks a little fishy. It's clear that he's a good baseball mind, and he's a very good role model for this younger group of players as well, because he's a young guy himself, and he had his own stint in the minor leagues. And the thing that everybody asks me when I tell them that, you know, oh, our manager this year is Pat Leland, they automatically go, oh, is he related to Jim? Yes, he's related to Jim. But I've kind of made a point to not really bring that up a whole lot, or not ask him about it a whole lot, because yeah, he's Jim Leland's son. Like, Jim Leland's one of the greatest managers of all time, but this isn't Jim Leland's story. This is Pat Leland's story, and he's beginning to write it really beautifully, coming off a season with some unfinished business, going to the championship in low A, and you know, they fell, of course, but the White Sox had enough faith in him to say, you know what, we want you to stick with this group of guys, and so we're bumping you up to the next level, and he does not take that for granted at all.
So there's lots of familiar faces, like, in the rotation. I think, look, I'd be remiss to not bring up the fact that Aldrin Bautista is down currently. We're not going to, you know, really get into it because we don't know anything, but he was a member of this rotation. He's not now, but it's still full of people that we kind of knew. What are you expecting to see this year out of the starting rotation?
Well, when I first got a look at the roster out of camp, you know, I did see a lot of familiar faces in the starter category. And just given how some of those guys performed last year, I expected a bit of an uphill battle coming out of camp, and I got the complete opposite. A lot of these guys are really tight this year and definitely improved in the offseason about as much as you can. Lucas Gordon, for instance, you know, walks were an issue for him last year. That's been his focus. It's been clear to see out of the gate. He's barely walking anybody right now. So, you know, it's been nice to see him tighten up with the command and the control, and just a lot more life behind his fastball. That changeup is still deadly to right-handed hitters. You know, he's just one example. Tanner McDougal's another guy who I've been really impressed with. His walks have been a little high, but the strikeouts have also been high. And it's very clear, just given his, like, fastball velo, I mean, he's sitting 96, 97 with ease, that he is far, far removed, knock on wood, from his injury a few years back. He is full steam ahead, and he didn't take his demotion to low A last year lightly, and he's got some dog in him this year, and it's clear to see. So those are just two guys who have really stuck out to me as consistent, improved competitors on this roster, and I think could see a double A promotion by the end of the year.
Yeah, and you've also got a guy like Shane Murphy, who's just as consistent can be. You know, he always goes out there and limits the amount of base runners and makes pitches when he needs to. I like him a lot as well. I mean, that Tanner McDougal curveball, slider, fastball mix is just absolutely devastating. Yeah. I mean, there are some quality arms in there in the rotation.
I was surprised to see Shane Murphy break camp with us, just because, you know, after the high A season ended last year, the White Sox tried him out at Triple A for, I think, two outings, maybe one start and one out of the pen. And I mean, he passed with flying colors. So I was a little, there's a bit of a question mark there. But you know, that's the minors. I mean, sometimes you land in places where you don't expect to. I mean, look at the guys who ended the year with us last year, in Winston-Salem and broke camp in low A, like Calvin Harris and Casey Sauke. I mean, those, I never would have expected those two to break camp a level below. Same with Jordan Sprinkle, really. I mean, the bat is one thing, but his defense is fantastic. So it was a bit of a shock just to see certain guys placed on our roster or anybody else's versus one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, sticking with the pitching staff, obviously, I mean, there's a bunch of guys in the bullpen, too. I mean, Jared Kelly has been in the system, you know, quite a while. What is it? And then Tommy Vail, Carson Jacobs, Peters, Hartog. There's just a whole bunch of guys. It hasn't gone necessarily as planned, but no. What have you seen as kind of like the standouts through the season so far?
You know, I feel like everybody in the bullpen right now kind of has their own hills to climb. There's not one person at the moment who stands out to me as, he's a big leaguer. You know, like Eric Adler, I think was the last one. Maybe Zach Franklin. Those types of guys piqued my interest that way last year and the year before. But this year it's more guys who found themselves with us on the tail end of last season, really did not do well, and then surprised us opening the season performing really well, like Luke Bell. Luke Bell had a couple of really, really bad outings last year out of the pen, and he's seemed to have tightened up, and you know, he's one of those big frame guys who he's got good stuff and, you know, good fastballs, any reliever should. And you know, he's putting out good results. Carson Jacobs, I mean, you want to talk about big frame. I mean, the guy's 6'9". I don't think 215 is correct. I think that's just what Major League Baseball has on the – I keep looking at that on online. I'm just like, there's no way. Somebody needs to update that. But, you know, that's the kind of guy that you can really mold and sculpt into a powerhouse reliever. And so, you know, hoping to see good things from him this year too. But nobody in the bullpen in particular has been absolutely lights out, get him to the next level. I like what I'm seeing from Jared Kelly. Like you said, Tommy Vail is lights out. But you know, the bullpen right now has been kind of the culprit in why we've, you know, lost recent games by a run or two. So it's early. You know, it's early, and there's lots to still be worked out. But the plus side is there's a lot of baseball to be played. So we'll just see what happens.
So early this year, when the roster first came out, you had Jackson Appel and Weston Eberle as your catchers. But then, you know, with the Carroll promotion and just like the movement with all the catchers in the system, Eberle gets poached and sent to Charlotte. What are you seeing right now? And what have you heard? Luis Pineda's up, came from the dev list.
Yeah.
What have you heard about those two, behind the dish so far this year?
Who, Appel and Pineda?
I mean, I guess you can talk about all three because, Eberle is kind of a new face for most people.
That's the thing, you know, the games that I've called, I haven't seen Pineda play yet. I mean, he's only two games that he played last week, and it's become clear that Jackson Appel to begin the season is the everyday catcher. And you know, if you've got him versus Luis Pineda, I mean, no discredit to him, but a guy who's been in the system now 6 years and is just cracking high A versus a sixth rounder out of Texas A&M after spending 3 years at an Ivy League program, the White Sox, you know, spent more money on their sixth rounder. So it's a simple business decision of, you know, we're going to bank on this guy. But catching in the White Sox system has always seemed like a very mixed bag and an ongoing project. There's never been just one guy who, I mean, I guess you could call Caro that recently, but it's always had an ebb and flow to it where anybody at any given time could really pop off and show their stuff several games in a row. So, you know, I like what I've been seeing offensively from Appel. Defensively, he's shown sparks of, like, I remember in one of the first three games or one of the first two games out of the Greensboro series, it was like the second or third inning, or I think it was the second inning. Appel threw out two base runners in a row from first to second to get out of the inning. That to me is like that. You don't see that every day. So there's his little flash, kind of a glimpse into what, you know, he's capable of. And with more reps, I mean, that type of stuff's only going to, it's only going to get finer. So yeah, I like what I'm seeing from Appel. Have yet to really, get a good look at Pineda, but Weston Eberle, I mean, I remember talking to Q several times last year about Eberle and how, and I mean, this is from Q, a former major league catcher. It was his opinion that Weston is one of the better defensive catchers in the organization. So, I seems to me that he brought that opinion to the player development staff and said, hey, I mean, I think we need to get this guy some reps at AAA. And I mean, you know, even if it's just a bullpen catcher for a little while, you know, letting him get acclimated to the pace at AAA and the more refined techniques that pitchers have in AAA, it's only going to benefit him. I've only seen guys who go up to AAA, even for one game, come back with something that they've learned. Because even if they fail miserably, it's like, okay, you've played at the highest level of the minor leagues. You know what this is like. You know what the expectations are. And so they only come back with something that they've gained, whether or not the experience was positive or negative.
Yeah, Eberle's looked good defensively, so it really doesn't surprise me that that's one of the things that's been said about him. And with the newfound focus in the White Sox system with Walker McKinven coming over from the Brewers org, it seems kind of like, he probably has somewhat of an idea of exactly what he's looking for. At least I would think that anyway.
I think so.
I wanted to bring something up here real quick because we're kind of moving to, through the infield here. And one of the guys that I was going to bring up here is Sam Antonacci.
Yeah.
Talking of the Greensboro series, how bonkers was that Michael Escoto, yeah, Sam Antonacci brawl?
So, was it even a brawl? Like,
I
hit myself over the head with that one because it's like, first of all, Caden Connor was up to bat. All I'm paying attention to is Caden Connor and whoever was on the mound. Because I got to call each pitch, I got to keep up with what's happening at the normal part of the game. Out of nowhere, I see both benches clear, bullpen sprinting in. And I just, we got a brawl. I don't know what's going on, but we've got a brawl. And it was really quick. Michael Escoto, took a swing at him. I don't know exactly what was said. I think that Escoto, after looking back at film from that night, was kind of messing around with Antonacci already. That's what it looked like to me. So Antonacci must have said something that, Escoto didn't like or whatever. But even with that being the theoretical here, it's like, you got to have a thicker skin than that. You're a professional athlete. You can't take a swing at a guy for, saying something a little off color or whatever. I mean, I don't know what was said, but, man, it all happened so fast and it just seemed so unnecessary. But hey, credit to Pat Listash, man. He got right in the middle of that and said, no. We're not doing that. Everybody's gonna disperse and we're gonna get this game going. I like Pat a lot. He's a character. I think he's a good guy to have in the clubhouse and the dugout too.
Yeah, the move to having bench coaches is
helpful, right? Yeah.
Super, super awesome idea to actually have like a full staff in a minor league dugout for sure.
Well, and a guy who's as accredited as Pat Listach too. I mean, he was 1992 Rookie of the Year. I mean, he had a bonkers season for the Brewers. I think he set the stolen bases record that year for the Brewers. I remember looking in the comments when John Boy posted the video of the fight. Yeah. I guess I must have mentioned something about Pat Listash, and like 10 people were like, Pat Listash, that's a legendary pull. And I was like, he's right here in Winston-Salem, baby.
Yeah, on social media, obviously John Boy took the video that I put up and tweeted it out. And then there was another major leaguer that was like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Kick him off the team. Get him out of baseball. I mean, there's a lot of discourse over that whole thing.
Yeah. But
James, you want to hop into this infield stuff here?
Oh, sure. I mean, Antonacci's doing like kind of Antonacci things with the 140 WRC plus there. What have you seen? Do you have like a defensive position for him that he's best at, and then just, you know, the versatility that, you know, Leland has with him and some of the other college bats that are on that infield with Galaney and who else? AMAC is there, right?
Yeah. The defensive versatility thing just doesn't surprise me. You know, it's become more common in baseball that, you know, if you're drafted or signed by a major league team, chances are you're not a one trick pony defensively. So, you know, that was not a surprise to me. What compounds that is the fact that the White Sox have pretty much had that going for them all 5 years that I've been here. So it's no surprise to see guys like Galaney and Antonacci and AMAC playing multiple positions. Caden Connor's another one. It's kind of an understanding, you know, that's one of the strengths of at least this White Sox farm system, is to have guys who can adjust and do more than just play second or just play short or just play third. Pat's got a lot of versatility, but I think he's had that versatility, you know, through his first 2 years in Kannapolis. So I don't expect that to change.
Yeah. You also got Drake Logan, who's playing first base for the Dash, and, you know, with Kannapolis for, you know, the majority of the games that he got into, he was playing the outfield. So
yeah, they can do it all, man. I mean, once you get into the, you know, catcher and center fielder positions, it becomes a little more difficult to weave in and out. Those are pretty much straight and narrow, but yeah, there's plenty of versatility to go around.
Yeah, Brooks Baldwin rode that, you know, ability straight to the major leagues. So
sure did.
There is certainly a, if you can do something like that, they will find a spot for you.
Absolutely.
Well, maybe the most interesting guy on the Dash, Ian, is Haral Perez. We only got like the brief cameo last year. He, you know, we were told that he had power, but it looks like the power has arrived. Do you know of any adjustments that were made there for him?
As for any adjustments, not particularly, but like you said, I mean, the power's there. You know, he's second in the league in home runs right now. He's already got four, which is, I mean, that's more in a 2.5 week stretch than I remember anybody hitting over the past couple of years. So it's just refreshing to see some consistent power. You know, look, Perez is, you know, he's obviously got that, he's got that accolade of being one of the top 30 prospects to his name. That's only one of two top 30 prospects that this Dash team has to begin the season, with more on the way coming from Kannapolis for sure. But right now, I mean, in terms of, you know, guys who MLB Pipeline have written reports on, it's him and Aldrin Batista. So really right now, Perez is the only one of those two we got. And I think, you know, Perez seems to take that pressure well. I don't think he lets it get to him. He seems to be a pretty free-flowing baseball lover with a high IQ for the game. I think he shows up ready to work every day and gives it his all. And, you know, if he goes down 0-for-4, all right, whatever, he comes back and, you know, logs a multi-hit game or a home run or something. I mean, I think the best is yet to come for him.
So one thing that a lot of the other affiliates in the org do not have, or didn't have, at least at the beginning of the season, which is, this has changed for a couple of them just from signing some of the older guys that have shown up in Charlotte, but the Dash have a ton of outfield options.
Yeah.
You've got Caden Connor, who's been playing a bunch, Cole McConnell, who is a guy that was drafted last year and nobody saw him, and he just happened to pop up in Winston-Salem at the beginning of this year. Then you got Sammy Zavala, who was there all year last year, who's been hitting the last week, and he's looked really good. But then you got Hogan on the dev list, and then you've got, I don't know how long he's going to stay, but Terrell Tatum coming back from injury, an old friend coming back.
Yeah.
You haven't seen him yet, but no. And then you got Drake Logan. So, you know, what's Pat to do out there? He's just got options as far as, you know, how he can line things up.
Yeah, I think it's become pretty clear that Sammy Zavala, once again, is going to be the, you know, the everyday center fielder. And that's where he shines. I mean, I've seen him lay out for everything. I mean, he is not afraid to put his body in front of the ball. He's so fast, man. He just darts to those gaps and makes ridiculously difficult catches look like the easiest thing in the world. That said, you know, I'm still concerned about his bat a little bit, but what I'm not concerned about again is his attitude and his intangibles, like his eye. I mean, last year he didn't walk once, I don't think, this past week. But again, like he had, I think, 7 walks through the first 9 games. So, you know, the eye's still there. I think he has kind of, and I've heard Jeff and possibly you guys say that, you know, he noticed a little bit of pullback on his leg kick. I think that he's leveled out his bat a little more. Near the beginning of last season, I noticed that, you know, his bat path was kind of downward angled, and that's what caused him to ground out a lot, of course. But it seems like he's, you know, refined the swing a little bit. He seems more confident in a plan going up to the plate. He's not just swinging away at whatever. Like, he wants something outside if they're going to put the shift on him. So, you know, like you said, he hit really well this past week. I think he had 2 multi-hit games, 2 for 4, 2 for 5. So the other thing, too, that people forget about Sammy Zavala, and I think it's because he's so mature, is that he's so young. I mean, he's only 20. He's still got a lot of time. And I know that just based on his character, he's won the respect of a lot of people in the Chicago White Sox organization. And I think that moves mountains when you're not doing so well, you know, at the plate or in the field or wherever it might be. So I'm very optimistic. I think that, you know, now that the Bannister effect pitching wise has kind of come into play, maybe we'll start to see the Fuller effect kind of blossom here this year. So, you know, you just never know. Everybody's different. And Sammy Zavala is just on his own journey right now. But, you know, back to defensive versatility. I mean, you know, he's got it in the infield. He's got it in the outfield, too. You know, corner outfield positions are obviously easier to mix and match. And so, you know, he's got a lot of good names. I've never once been worried about Winston-Salem's defense. Not in 5 seasons now. I've never been worried about it. The only thing that I think outfielders have lacked have been bats, but we've seen guys turn it around after horrendous seasons. Like, I remember all the way back to Duke Ellis in 2022, hitting near the Mendoza line. It takes one mental reset. Now, whatever he changed in his outlook or perspective, or, you know, whatever mental game he had to tweak, he came right back up to high A in 2023 and started hitting around 300 consistently. And, you know, now he's got major league time under his belt. So we could see anybody who might not be piquing anybody's interest on a mass scale start to pop up here. All these guys are capable of it, and the outfielders are no exception.
One guy that I wanted to mention before we move on here is Ryan Galani, because he's been tearing the cover off the ball, and we didn't mention him earlier for infield or outfield. I mean, because, again, versatility.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Galani it seems to me that he's more comfortable at first than the outfield, but that's by such a small margin. Where he's really shining right now is at the plate. I mean, through 15 games, he's batting .333. And I think that the first thing I ever noticed about Ryan Galani was that he had such a wide base at the plate. And, you know, I didn't play past 7th grade or whatever, but, you know, I was always taught that, you know, you wanted to have some balance in your stance. I feel like he was just a little too wide last year. And this year, it seems like he's kind of closer together. And I think it's giving him a little more balance. And with that balance, a little more time to read the ball and really make good swings. I mean, you hang a breaking ball to him this year, like, it's leaving the yard. Pitchers know that after the first, you know, 2.5 weeks of the season. So he's really putting on a show. I think I was thinking about it earlier today. Like, all right, now that Batista's injured, who is going to be the first person bumped up to double A as, like, you know, tried and true promotion? That's where you are for the rest of the season if it works out. I think it's Ryan Galani. I really do. So he's been leading this offense, and you know, he's got a lot of guys who are following suit. Look at Sam Antonacci. He's got the second highest on base streak in all of high A right now. You know, there's a lot of value in that, and he's been known to hit the cover off the ball time or two if he gets one he likes, you know.
Yeah, Gallini's got, what, 167 WRC plus in high A. So, yeah, probably a good call there as far as him being the next one up. So, speaking of promotions, we'll end with this, I guess. Just how much do you basically have to focus, or if you don't, I don't know, on the Kannapolis team, just as far as, you know, like who might be coming, and then what are you looking forward to the rest of the season, like in conjunction with that?
Well, I mean, I mentioned the guys earlier, Calvin Harris and Casey Sauke and you know, Jordan Sprinkle, even. I was really surprised to see them down a level this year. So I, just for their sake, I hope it's them, you know. But obviously, I mean, you got the big names, Caleb Bonnemer, George. I hope and pray like every night that George Wolko puts on a Winston-Salem Dash uniform. I want to see him hit home runs over that right field corner. It's just his destiny. And I mean, the guy's built like Aaron Judge too. Like he's just massive. So I would really love, you know, a promotion sooner than later for those two especially. But you know, the powers that be will they'll let me have my fun when they're good and ready.
For sure. Should be the Braden Montgomery show here before too long.
Braden Montgomery. Think, gosh, so. How did I forget Braden Montgomery too?
It shouldn't be too much longer.
There are so many just excellent prospects down in Kannapolis, and it's making this system look better and better and better as the season goes on, just to see like an even streamline of talent. I mean, there are good things happening at every single level. Nobody's getting blown out of the water on a nightly basis like we've suffered through the past few years. Like, let's be honest, like it hasn't been awesome, but I think that for the first time in a while, there's like really something that White Sox fans can kind of latch onto and put their hope in at every single level of the minor leagues. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Let's hope. So I want to ask, since you brought up George, that home run at the Future Sox Showdown, how far do you think that thing went?
Well, oh man, I forgot how it read. It was definitely over 400. I want to say like 409 or like, because it's not very far down the line. Yeah. It's like 315. But yeah, well over 400. I mean, he crushed that. It was like 107, 108 off the bat. He just... It lights out, home run. I knew it. Everybody else knew it.
Yeah, so. He hit one the other night in Kannapolis. Hit it like 418 right down the right field line. Ended up in the third deck on that condo building right there.
I haven't been to Kannapolis in like 2-3 years. I don't even know how are the dimensions of that ballpark? Like, is it kind of weird like ours, or do they have kind of a more even?
It's a little bit, it's a little bit more even. They got like a cutout that kind of does some weird things in center field. It comes from the line and then cuts out a little bit.
That is weird.
Yeah. So it's like kind of like a triples alley type thing, you know, where if the ball gets into that, you know, hits that corner, it'll rattle around out there and do some weird things. I don't think it's particularly short at the lines, but, you know, it doesn't matter if you're hitting it 400 and
right. Yeah.
400 plus.
Don't worry about it.
So, yeah. So we've talked about the baseball stuff. Do you have any concerts that you're going to this summer? Do you have anything slated?
All right. I have two nights of Widespread Panic in Asheville in July. My fiance got me those for, we were supposed to go to Tedeschi Trucks Band in Asheville last year. The hurricane, unfortunately, canceled everything, concerts included. I mean, it was horrible. So, you know, we got refunded for those. And she was like, you know, I guess we didn't really get to do anything for your birthday. Like, is there anything coming up? And I was like, as a matter of fact, yes, Widespread Panic will be playing Asheville for three nights in July. So we're going to two of those three, and that'll be fun. I just got back from Las Vegas. Not just got back. It's already been a month. We went to the Sphere and saw Dead & Company. I'm still thinking about it. I'm still thinking about just how unique of a venue that is and how crisp. Ian, you would have been all over the audio, man. It is clear as crystal in there. Like, they weren't even turned up that loud. The sound is what blew me away the most. The graphics and, you know, the visuals and all that are fun, but man, what a sound driven venue. Like that was clearly the first thing that those architects and bigwigs at Madison Square Garden had in mind when designing that was this place has to sound good, and it does. So, yeah, I've been getting my concert fix. I'll have more, down the road, but, it's baseball season. It's time to lock in. It's time to grind. I'm ready for it again. And I'm really, really excited about this team because they're playing with a winning edge. Like you said, down to the very last pitch. I mean, we only have a handful of games where we've lost by more than one run. And, if you can play with that last pitch intensity and keep that going despite, a few or more losses in a row here or there, eventually things are going to work out in your favor. So I got full faith and confidence in Pat Leland and his staff. And, all these guys really have a chance to do something special and a good number of them to take care of unfinished business from last year when they fell in the championship as the Cannonballers, but the team's back and they're ready to go, man. I'm trying to take it all in because these seasons can go way too fast if you let them. So, I don't know. I'm just really kind of stopping and smelling the roses a little bit and getting to know these guys better and hopefully playing a small part in telling their stories as it unfolds.
You got anything, James, on the way out here? All right. Well, thanks for coming and spending some time with us, Andrew. We really appreciate it every year.
Anytime.
Absolutely awesome. All right. Well, maybe we can make this more than a once a year thing and we'll catch up with you later on. That would be good. At least a wrap up to, hear what you saw throughout the year.
Yeah. I mean, maybe a midseason thing too. Or, I come on next month and, give a little report. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Sounds good. Well, appreciate it. And, we will catch up with you soon. Thanks.
All right. Thanks guys.
Saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.